Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Temptation Island Wrap Up. Today, we are talking about Season 3, Episode 6, Unexpected Loss. My name is Kirsten McInnes, and I'm joined, as always, by the marvelous Maggie Morgan. Hi, Maggie, what's up?
Hi, Kirsten. I'm doing really well. This episode of Temptation Island was a little sleepy for me. It was a little heavy for me. I'm used to, you know, the past few weeks we've gotten really spoiled by having like dumb singles drama. So I was a bit like, oh no, there's like a lot of heavy stuff happening in this episode, but I'm excited to talk about all of it and maybe try to make this a bit lighter, you know, in the face of all of it. So I'm excited to be here.
Amazing. Yeah, we'll figure out how to make it funny because we have an amazing guest to help us with that. Evan Windsor is here. Evan, how are you?
I am doing fantastic. I am so glad to be here. The show finally has, you know, some sort of queer drama happening with at least one bisexual and talks of a throuple. So it's like right in my wheelhouse. And also there's no longer anyone named Evan on the show that sucks really bad. So perfect time to have me here.
Yeah, you're not hearing us every week be like, screw Evan.
I was going to walk in here and be like, Maggie, I hope you reach your true potential. But everybody else, sayonara.
I mean, honestly, that would have been iconic. But
yeah, I wish you would have.
Would I have cried if Evan came in like that? Maybe. I don't know. No, I wouldn't have cried, but it would have
been.
Depends
on the day.
Okay, so before we jump into this episode, first of all, I finally clocked what the other lyric in the theme song is. And it goes, you're not going to tempt me. You'll never forget me. Which I feel like is very dark.
Yeah. Also, it is very dark. Also, I had no idea that that was the other lyric. I truly just thought it was, you're not going to tempt me about 17 times.
They do that a bunch of times.
It's like 15 times.
Yeah.
Oh, and then sorry.
So it's like you, verbose. It's like you aren't going to tempt me, but also you will never forget me. I will be in your brain forever.
Yeah. Alexis, that's what she's saying to Kendall before they go to bed at night.
No, Kendall has tempted her.
Oh man. Or she's tempting Kendall, right?
She has tempted.
She's saying, you'll never forget me.
She has tempted Kendall. And I think in real time, Kendall has assuredly forgotten about her.
I would be willing to bet a lot of money on that, actually. I bet the house on that one.
The theme song was like extra awkward this week too, because I had the scenes from last week and it ended like right where last week's episode ended. So it's like Markelle Wahlberg going over to her and she's like, my brother died. It was an overdose. And all of a sudden it's like, you're not going to tempt me. It was just like such a total whiplash. I was like, this, some editor needs to be fired right now.
It's classic Temptation Island, isn't it? Like there's no balance at all.
There's
like tonally, the show makes zero sense, like zero sense whatsoever.
Yeah. And that's why we get weeks like this week where it's all about like loss and like sad, heavy things. And then like other weeks were like, oh, that was so fun. We just saw someone cheat on their partner with two people. That was fine.
Like fun.
Yeah, fun. So Evan, how have you been enjoying the season so far? Do you have any particularly hot takes about any of the couples or singles?
I think my hottest take is that Aaron, well, okay, let me phrase this differently. Erica, obviously protagonist, no debate. Aaron might be like my favorite though. And everyone thinks Aaron is like super boring. It doesn't like her, but I'm a fan. So
I want to hear why. Can you divulge
for us?
I don't know if it's just that she's a soccer player or if she just is like the most similar to being a lesbian and is therefore my type. I'm not sure. There was just something about her. I was like, all right. I'm on board here.
God. Wait, so you just have a crush on her?
Well, you know, okay. I'm not going to deny that.
She is very beautiful, to be fair. She's very beautiful, and she does seem like a guy's girl, but not in like a bad way, because clearly she's very close with the other girls at the villa. And I don't mean like a guy's girl in the way where it's like she's not like other girls and she doesn't have a girlfriend.
I think she would say that. I think she would say I'm not like
maybe, but I also think that she like has made it very clear based off of her relationship with the other girls at the villa that like she's a good friend and like nice mm-hmm. to be around. Like she's so sweet. And going to the like first scene, you know, Kristen is talking to our therapist, Mark L. Wahlberg, about her loss. And Erin is like immediately moves in to give her a hug and comfort her. And I think that the bond that all of these, you know, women in the couples have is very, very lovely actually to watch. It makes me feel all warm and fuzzy inside because I'm not like, oh no, this person is going to go back to the villa and spiral out with a bunch of people drunk around them. Like it's very clear that they're taking care of each other, you know?
I think that's, yeah, that's definitely a good point. And I feel like this is a good episode for an Erin fan to come on for. Mm-hmm. I feel like I actually really liked Erin in this episode. I think she's having a lot of realizations and like, maybe I identify with her a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just like of all of the couples' drama, I think like I'm most on board personally with the Erin stuff. So that's certainly part of it.
I feel like, you know, I this whole time have been like, what are any of these people doing together? None of them should be together. But actually, this episode, I really turned a corner on Julian and Kristen.
Me too.
And not to like jump the shark a little bit and talk, you know, later in the episode. But I was like, oh, I actually am at the point now where I want them to be together at the end of this. Like, I want them to figure this out because, you know, hearing what she and maybe we can just start sort of get into it now. I mean, but like,
we don't have to go in chronological order if this is what we want to talk about. This is what we want to talk about. This is our podcast.
Exactly, Kristen. Yeah, I don't know. Why am I making these rules for myself? I'm like Kristen making rules for myself.
Yeah, come on. We're just vibing here. And so the thing too with that is like this episode made me want Julian and Kristen to figure it out, but it also made me believe that that might actually be possible. Whereas up to this point, I felt like Kristen is so shut off to Julian that it's just not going to happen and that she just wants to break up no matter what. Whereas now we're starting to unpack where it's like, oh, they have this horrible shared trauma they have never talked about. And obviously that's created a wall between them. And now they're both talking about it. They're both seeing clips of each other talking about it. Like maybe they're going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. I think also we've been sort of hypothesizing over the past, you know, 6 weeks about like, well, she brought him here as a test to try because she wants to get rid of him. But like now I sort of understand that I don't think she does want to get rid of him. And sort of like the conclusion that she came to, which is like, I am holding myself at a distance from everyone I love because I can't go through a loss like that again. It made perfect sense to me. I was like, oh, this makes complete sense. Also, it makes sense that, you know, they kept referencing this cheating that Julian has done on her this whole time. They've been talking about how he's cheated on her and how he's done this to her. But I looked on her Instagram. She lost her brother. She posted for his birthday or something in like 2018, just like timeline wise, not to like go through her private Instagram account and like go in her business, but just to get like a bit of a timeline. She posted for her brother's birthday and he had already passed away in 2018, I believe. So this was at least like 4 or 5 years ago that he cheated on her. And this wasn't like last year he cheated on her, you know, which I do think gives context to the whole situation. Because if they've been together since they were 15, I would imagine she probably went away to college. And that's when it happened.
I buy that. I bought board of this story that you have spun.
Maggie Morgan,
maybe she can DM me.
World's greatest detective really went to find the primary sources to put together a timeline for this case, and you know what? It adds up. I just can't imagine. I would never have thought to do that, and that's why I have to have you here with me.
DM me, Kristen. Let me know if you're listening. Let me know if it's true. Sorry for being in your business.
Kristen, if you're listening, we just want you to be happy and we like you a lot.
And Erin, if you're listening, DM me just for other reasons.
So at the start of the episode, when they're finishing up the bonfire, this is when they're really talking about the overdose. And Mark L. Wahlberg goes, oh, how did that make you feel when Kristen talks about finding her dead brother?
I know.
Yeah, this was weird. He just like at the end of last episode, like, oh, he's actually like doing the caring host thing. But then he rolls over and he starts like interrogating her almost. He's like, how did that make you feel? Did you feel responsible? Do you think you're responsible? I'm just like, what the heck, man? Back off. Give her a room to breathe and answer your questions before you start accusing her.
Maybe don't ask that question. Maybe don't ask someone if they feel like, you know what? She hasn't spoken with her boyfriend of 11 years about this. I don't think she wants to talk to you, Mark.
I think he really fancies himself to be a therapist, like, which is fine. I get it. I like to, you know, sometimes fancy myself to be like a therapist as well with my friends. You know, where Marco Wahlberg's probably a type 2 Enneagram like me, you know, just wanting to help others. I get it, Mark, but I'm not sure that this was the correct approach. Like, if maybe we shouldn't have like been so lacking in subtlety with this one. The poor girl. It made me really, really sad, this whole talk. It was really tough to watch, you know?
Yeah, it's really hard. And then they do the whiplash of going straight to the men's bonfire. And so here's the thing that I've really noticed about the men's bonfires versus the women's bonfires. At the women's bonfires, they see their boyfriends being the worst men possible and just doing horrible things.
Except Corey.
Corey has done truly nothing wrong. When I thought Corey was horrible, I was misreading the situation. We'll talk
about later in the episode. So Corey really redeems himself in my eyes and for anything. But yes, continue.
But then at the men's bonfires, they just see like really emotional, like sad things about how like their girlfriends are going through a hard time. And it's such a big difference.
I feel like it's just sort of like a case study in like heteronormative, like relationship, you know, like boundaries and things. Like the girls all go, and talk about their feelings, and the guys like are getting physical, and it's like, that's not. Yeah, I don't know. I agree with you, Kirsten. It's sort of like bizarre to me. I don't know.
Yeah, the way the guys act like around the bonfire is also completely different. Like the girls are all very, very supportive of each other. Like, you know, you're great. We're here for each other. Like when they get home, they tell all the single guys, like, go away. They have a little girl sit down
with martinis.
Yeah. Love it. Love it. The men are just like, as soon as they get in the car, like, you know what? Your girlfriend's a bitch. And she should not have done that.
Well, and the other thing too, though, is like, the only exception to that is that nobody is saying that to Kendall, because universally everyone recognizes that Kendall is the worst man alive, except for Alexis and Nicole.
And Kendall.
Honestly, Kendall really is terrible. Like, I left this episode and like, you know, this is like dumb trash reality television, right? Like, you shouldn't be thinking about it for longer than you watch it. And yet I found myself like very disturbed by some of the comments that Kendall made, to the point like I was texting my mom about it afterwards and like really getting into it with her, because I was like, this guy just like is a menace to all women. He's a menace to society, honestly.
I sent a friend a voice memo during a specific Kendall scene that maybe I'll play for the pod.
Please.
Kendall shouldn't be allowed to be on TV. And also, I would like to make one counterpoint to you, Maggie, and that's we should be thinking about the show when we watch it and when we listen to the Temptation Islander hop-up. And then come on.
Of course. You know what I meant.
Did either of you notice that Thomas is now Tom full-time, now that the other Tom got sent home?
He is! Yes, I noticed that too, because I had him in my notes, you know, as Thomas, and I was like, oh, now everybody's calling him Tom. But also, like, I'm so sorry. Listen, I know that like Kirsten and I have been sort of having a debate of like whether what Thomas is doing is kosher or not. I'm so sorry, but he's saying blatantly in his confessionals he has a crush on Sophia. It's just not going to get physical because of the line with Chelsea. I'm so sorry. If you have a crush on someone, the line has been crossed. You have a crush on someone you're going on dates with, like, you're telling national television you have a crush on somebody else. No, Thomas sooks. Like, he really, really sooks. He's a step above sucks. He sooks.
Yeah, like, here's the thing, because we might as well get into this now because it was going to happen at some point. Mm-hmm. I'm Polly. And so I like to watch the show through a Polly lens and like think mm-hmm. about if these relationships were Polly relationships, like mm-hmm. they're so, this would be a very different show if these people all had open relationships and like were loving and supportive of mm-hmm. each other and that. But mm-hmm. when you're in a relationship with somebody who isn't Polly and you are in that relationship, there are spoken or unspoken, there are agreed upon rules, right? And you don't just get a free pass to do whatever you want because of who you are. So like, I don't think Tom is a bad person for thinking these things or wanting to do these things, but it does push him outside of the monogamous relationship he has with yes. Chelsea.
Yeah,
it's just boundaries. Exactly. The boundaries that they set, the very clear boundaries. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing too, is even if they did have a poly relationship, but he was doing things that are outside of what's been communicated in that relationship, still not right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know what? Maybe monogamy, not for Tom. And that's okay. It's not mm-hmm. for everyone.
And Sophia, man, she is feeling Tom. We'll discover later in the episode.
For him to leave this 22-year-old alone. I'm sorry. It's just, I cannot get over the fact.
She's grown. She's a consenting adult.
Yeah, she's a consenting adult, but he is, it's gross. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like I go both ways on this because I start out with like, this is gross. He's much, much older than her. And my wife is 11 years older than me. You could have big age differences. It can work, but mm-hmm. You know, it's also very creepy when an almost 40-year-old is, you know, touching the butt of an almost 20-year-old in a sensual manner.
And it's like on TV. That's the thing about that scene.
If they were quietly dating in the girls, I would never think about it, and it would never occur to me to be bothered. But the fact that I'm seeing it, like, all I can think about is in Mean Girls when the principal's like, Coach Carr, step away from the underage girl. Like, that's how I feel when I see Tom. So
I also, that scene in general, Evan, I was like, this is so, because I was like trying not to be judgmental, right? I'm like trying to have a somewhat open mind while I'm watching this. But I'm like, this scene is like, if you were privately doing this in the comfort of your privacy, have your fun, but I don't need to watch someone write their name in mud on your ass. Like, I just don't need to do that. That's not what I signed up for.
What I love is Tom is like, but I can't kiss her because that breaks the rules. But writing your name on her ass and smacking it doesn't? Listen, absolutely not.
Yeah. No.
The audacity.
Like marking your property by writing your name on it. That is definitely line crossing.
Yeah. Yes. Completely. I mean, do we want to today, maybe instead of going in chronological order, do we want to just talk about like each couple and their journey throughout the episode?
Honestly, I think that will work better for this episode because I feel like a lot of progress was made.
Mm-hmm.
So with like the Tom, Chelsea, Blake, Sophia of it all, that they're kind mm-hmm. of all intermingled here.
Mm-hmm. I think that the Dr. Blake storyline is obviously progressing hardcore. And I'm sorry, Kirsten, I think we're going to see a Dr. Blake sex scene. I really do. I think that we're going to have to watch him and Chelsea make sweet love.
I think it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. That's what Chelsea said. So
I'm curious about what we did see this week, because I think we saw something, but then the show just didn't address it.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, had a boner in the pool.
Yeah. Like he was rubbing his dick on her back, right? Because he's like, do you feel that? And then everyone's like, man, what a nice hug they had. And I'm like, that was not a hug. That was a dick rubbing.
There's some heavy petting happening in the pool for sure. And he's like, do you feel that? And she's like, yeah, I feel that. And I think that maybe the show is like, oh, do you feel like the love that we're having? No, it's you're right. It's the dick rubbing.
It was his dick. That's that's what they chose to show on television. That's what you get. See, this is what we don't get on Love Island, because it airs at 8 p.m. on CBS. Temptation Island is on 10 p.m. on USA Network, and they can get away with a lot.
Okay, but here's the thing. Why is it on at 10 p.m.? Because you know what's on at 8 p.m.? Reruns of Temptation Island. Temptation Island is also on at 8 p.m. Why can't we just have it then? When I could go to bed at a reasonable time.
Wait, so they show like old seasons or old episodes?
No, it's like they showed episode 4, then episode 5, and then at 10, episode 6. So it's like,
oh my goodness.
It's like, I don't get it.
Actually, it makes sense, because I feel like if you are flipping on USA Network mm-hmm. at 8, you'll stay through till 11. You'll stay and watch all 3 episodes. And they're appealing to the people who have like melted into their couch by now on this part of the pandemic.
Yeah, and their brain has melted if they're watching the show. As my mother always says, like, my brain is melting watching the show.
You're watching too, so.
Exactly.
I asked my good Twitter friend, Markel Wahlberg, to move the show earlier, and he didn't do anything about it. And I'm very cross with him.
Oh, man. Mark, help out Evan. Come on.
I feel like we got Chelsea and Blake went on a date together.
Mm-hmm. They did. They went on that date, and she came back from the date and like was bright eyed, and all of the girls were like, oh my gosh, I've never really seen you like this.
Yeah,
she's like, I'm getting scared because I really like him.
Well, and she said, you know what's the scariest thing of all? I didn't even think about Tom while I was there.
And that is fair, because I have always felt, when I've been in love in my life, everything that I do, I'm thinking about the person that I love and like what they would like, if they would enjoy doing this with me. And like, if I'm ever having an interaction with a guy, I'm always like, oh, is this appropriate? Like, am I being disrespectful to this person that I love? Not in like a, like, just like personally, that is how I sort of go about when I'm in love. And so I can imagine that that would have sort of freaked her out if she's on a date and she's not thinking about her boyfriend who she's supposed to be loving so much at all.
I think it was Erica who was like, so do you think that's a sign or like?
Yes.
I think it was Aaron actually with the spot on advice.
Classic Aaron. Now, Blake and Chelsea, was their date just sitting next to a tree? I think their date might have been just sitting next to a tree.
Like a picnic?
Yeah, like the dates on this episode were wild. So
I have that written down too.
Kendall and Alexis, their date was sitting in the back of a pickup truck.
Beautiful. Like, by the way, Hawaii looks amazing. Oh yeah, on the
Hawaii
show.
Looks beautiful. I'm sure it's beautiful in person. I want to go there. Hopefully Brayden wins Big Brother Canada so we can go. But I don't think sitting in the back of a pickup truck is a date. I don't
Watching the sunset with lattes they were drinking.
Like, I guess you could go watch the sunset. Like, I guess that would count as a date. I don't know.
And like, you know, Aaron's off windsurfing and then they have like a sit down picnic on the beach. And meanwhile, Corey sits in a hammock. And that's the entirety.
We didn't get to see Corey have an actual date in this episode. We just got to see like casual hangs.
I thought that was his date. Sitting in a hammock was the date. That was cut in with the date.
Then Tom and Sophia get a date, which is exfoliating each other on the beach.
It's weird. I don't understand. Do you think that they were like doing like mud masks?
Well, and the thing is they're like exfoliate. I'm like, why are you using the same exfoliating agent on your face as your body? Like, that's not good skincare.
Like, maybe they just saw how sunburned Tom was and thought, let's get this man some skincare. But, you know, I wouldn't have gone straight to someone else's butt for that skincare. So,
well, you know what? He had a good time. He was like, just massaging her ass, like really going for it.
And the whole, this is the part that disturbed me the most, was that while he was massaging her ass, she was like, ooh, Tom, I love a little butt rub. And she's like talking through it. I was like, please, Sophia, stop commenting on the mud on the butt.
Yeah, the narration was really the worst part.
The worst part was definitely when Tom wrote Tom on her butt, like, as you said, essentially marking her as his property and not as a human being, you know, with thoughts and feelings and a say in the situation. So gross. And so then I feel like we'll just end with the bonfires as usual, though. So then,
okay. So then maybe I was going to say we should probably talk about Julian and Kristen so that we don't have like the big downer.
I think that's a, the end. I mean, I think that as long as we talk about Aaron and Corey last, I think we'll avoid like the major downers. But yeah, so let's do Julian and Kristen. So at the start of the episode, Julian gets the bonfire moment of when Kristen is talking about how she's scared that he will pass the test and doesn't know why she sticks around. But I feel like he reacts really well. He's like, yeah, that's why we're here. Like, I've heard this before.
I
wrote, this was when I wrote in my notes, like, I genuinely do think that Julian's grown a lot and he won't do it again based off of what he's saying. Like, it's not just generic, like, I made a mistake, she's got to get over it. Like, it felt very from the heart. And then, of course, we have therapist Mark Wahlberg really pressing him, trying to find the nugget of why he did it, you know?
Which that was very weird to me, because literally he's like, well, why'd you cheat? He's like, I didn't value what I had. I was being ignorant. No, dig deeper. What's missing? He's like, well, my girlfriend gave me everything, and for some reason I put it aside. He's like, but what was the reason, Julian? Tell us why you cheated.
Julian, do you feel responsible?
Like, Mark L. Wahlberg wants Kristen and Julian to be together really badly, I think.
Yeah,
I get it, because I'm sort of with Mark L. Wahlberg on that. Also, it reminds me of that Cardi B meme where she's like, what was the reason? it's like Mark L. Wahlberg is having that moment. But and then they go back, you know, to the house, and he they're in the car, and Kendall is like talking about how he's feeling this new wave of emotion because he's seeing Erica hurting. And Julian says, if you truthfully love her, don't let it slip, because I have, and you'll never feel more helpless in your whole life. And I do think that he's being really genuine about it, because he just watched a clip where it's like, clearly years later, he still can't make it up to her and they're still really struggling, you know?
Yeah, and then this is when Julian starts kind of hanging out with Maya a little bit, which I feel like, obviously, like, there's no romantic spark between Julian and Maya, but I think that they've become buds, which is kind of cute. Talking about how Kristen, like, bottles up her emotions, like, doesn't let people see her cry, like, that kind of thing. And, like, Julian's like, okay, like, we're in a mess here. And this episode is where Julian starts bringing up Kristen's brother passing away, which is, it's interesting because he hasn't seen that she's talking about that yet, but it's obviously like such a shared trauma between them that it transcends the relationship.
It's really, it's so sad. You know, he says that he has her brother tattooed on his leg, and that he promised to take care of Kristen, like the last conversation that he had with her brother. And he starts, you know, like bawling on camera, and you can tell he does not want to be showing that kind of emotion on camera. But like you said, Kristen, it's very top of mind for him right now. And, you know, when Kristen's on her date and they're both talking, her and her date are talking about how they have experienced loss at the hands of addiction, I was like, this is so tragic. Both of these people have gone through really, really tragic experiences. And I can't believe that we're getting like this level of tragedy and emotion on a Temptation Island episode. You know, it's very, very sad.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I feel like it's really good for Kristen that she started clicking a little bit more with Juwan, because she gets to express her grief, but also can still kind of have the security blanket of like being there for him in his grief, which like I relate to Kristen a lot in the like not sharing emotions and keeping walls up and that kind of thing. And so I feel like it's a really good fit because she's with someone that she can talk to about it in the meantime. But also, she, even though she's being vulnerable, she doesn't have to feel as vulnerable because he is also doing that and she can support him a little bit, which I think is always helpful. Is it healthy? I don't know, but I think it's helpful for her probably.
Yeah, I think both of these two have found, you know, people in their couple, you know, couples, singles that they're with on the dates that are both like not going to wind up being romantic partners for them, but are both going to like be really important pieces in these two coming back together. And I love it.
Wait, what if? Okay, what if? Okay. Oh, my God. End of the season. Julian and Kristen back together. Maya and Juwan find love. And they become like couple friends.
I'm here for it. Double dates.
On
Let's
board.
Do it.
Right?
Yes. Very yes. on board.
I think that would be really cute. Anyways, sorry. But yeah, basically the trauma between them is like, it's just, it transcends a romantic relationship. Like these two, again, they need therapy and not from Mark L. Wahlberg. Like,
agreed.
It's agreed. It's not enough. What were their dates? I don't even remember.
She was like sort of on a picnic situation and I don't remember where Julian was.
Yeah, they were like sitting next to a tree, but like a jungly tree.
Of course.
Maybe they went on an excursion.
Yeah, there Hawaii. May have been a Jeep in the background. I'm not sure.
Yeah, the date, I feel like they spent all of their budget on alcohol. So the dates are suffering. That's okay.
For sure. I mean, no, but they, okay, can we talk about that? Because it seems like they are drinking 24/7. My liver would pass away. Like, I don't know how I could do that. They literally like show them partying and then they wake up right in the morning and they're grilling and they're drinking again and making, you know, mojitos and stuff.
So I think the situation is truly if they were to stop drinking, they would have a hangover so profound that they would not be able to film the show anymore. And so they're like, you know what, just let them keep drinking. They'll be drunk for a month and a half, but our production will stay on schedule. They probably got like a back room of like banana bags for hydration.
What do you think that they spend on alcohol production?
Oh geez,
it's hard because I don't know how much alcohol costs in America.
It's a lot. Just because they're always doing like tequila shots too, right?
Yes.
It's not just like they're drinking like beers or something.
Yes,
they're drinking like alcohol.
Exactly. And making, you know, like daiquiris and margaritas, and you need lots of different types of alcohol for that.
Can we talk about how good the daiquiris looked in this episode?
They did. In I'd the be butter. On board.
I want a frozen drink. It's cold and rainy outside, but I'm like, yeah, I want a frozen drink.
Can you imagine being on the villa? Like, this honestly has stressed me out since the very first episode. That, like, they're all living in this house with a bunch of people they don't know. And they all have to like cook for each other in the morning. Like I thought that these meals would be catered, but it appears as though they all cook.
Yeah.
And that would stress me out. The dishes alone would stress me out.
So my guess is that this is done like somewhat similarly to Love Island, which is where normally they have to make their own breakfast, but they get like craft services for.
Oh, okay. That would actually make perfect sense because the only time that I've ever seen them cooking is breakfast.
Yeah, I'm assuming they don't actually have to do all the dishes either.
That's why I was going to say, do you think that they have like a person making daiquiris for them?
I just gasped. I gasped so much at the concept of someone just making daiquiris that I just stopped being able to breathe for a moment. I got really excited. I want a frozen drink. I want a frosé though, is what I want.
Yeah, ooh, what a
that
dream.
That is a headache in a glass. Yeah, what a dream.
Yeah, it's summer, okay? I'm going to get headaches.
Of course.
I can't wait to go out drinking again. And I didn't even go out drinking before, but now it's going to happen.
Oh, Evan, do you just wait till that border opens? I'll come visit.
Yeah.
Get a frozen drink.
We're going to like stay up until like 9:15. We're going to go crazy.
Hey, I have it. I know now that you can make it to 11:30. So, because, this episode was just randomly an extra half an hour long.
It was an hour and 12 minutes, which is such a weird thing.
Yeah, and then commercials, of course.
No, like with the commercials. It ended at 11:12. I don't get it.
Bizarre. It's the weirdest.
Wait, what started airing on USA Network at 11:13?
I don't have that information. Oh, no, I do. Temptation Island episode one. They're like, no. You know what? Yes, that is absolutely true.
God.
And it's funny because I was thinking, like, you know what? I haven't seen like their intro packages in a while, and it might be fun to go back and watch those at some point. And then like, that's the next thing that's coming on. I didn't stay up for it. I went to bed because it was very late for me. I am old, but
old. Oh my God. That is hilarious. So wait, USA Network is kind of like MTV and Temptation Island is their ridiculousness.
I guess. Also, they basically only play Temptation Island in Law and Order reruns. So, you know,
I mean,
you got to do what you can over at USA Network.
Name a better network. Temptation Island and Law and Order. What more could you want?
Honestly, I really can't. And they had Psych too, which is the third of the amazing trinity that is USA Network.
They apparently have a reality show with The Miz from The Challenge. So. Except he's old now too. Oh, so
they people love The Miz, and also this Challenge All Stars is starting soon, and there are legitimately people in their 50s competing on it. So
I love it.
Ageism Fun. Is dead in 2021.
Of course. Okay, so now should we move on to
let's do Kendall and Erica? Yeah. So we can end it on like less of a downer.
I'm so sorry that I've like completely derailed this podcast.
No, oh my gosh.
It's just it's all over the place. What happens here?
No.
I'm sorry. Have you not been listening?
Yeah.
Oh, I have been.
I was going to say, that makes me think you haven't been listening to us.
Wait, so Maggie, did Mary have any thoughts on
we need Mary.
Thomas or...
Yes. Okay, so my mom, just for transparency's sake, she missed the first 20 minutes of the episode.
Okay.
But she did say, hold on, we can say, well, the thing that she did say about Chelsea and Thomas, it has to do with their second bonfire, so maybe we should save it. But she did have to say that Chelsea just can't believe Tom is smacking another girl's butt. She's going straight back into Dr. Blake's arms. Another couple bites the dust.
The other thing, too, is it's so funny because Chelsea's whole thing is, oh, Tom is so flirty and it bothers me. And then she sees him being flirty and is like, I knew it.
Yeah. Well, my mom also said, you know, Thomas is devastated by Chelsea's clip. He's realizing they're on the path of a breakup. He didn't think he had to worry about her cheating. She probably didn't think she would see you spanking another girl's ass. Mic drop, mom.
Weren't they the ones who had the rule of like no sitting on the bed? Like if sitting on the bed is not allowed, smacking ass, not allowed. Like
Exactly. That's what I've been saying this whole time. Like, Thomas, I'm sorry, but we didn't even talk about the fact that Sophia kissed his entire face except for his mouth.
Well, she was drunk. Crying. He was like moving his mouth away.
Which like also Thomas, take a hint, maybe? Or no, not Thomas, Sophia. Your kisses are not wanted if he's moving away from you.
Is he does want to kiss her, but he just doesn't want the footage to exist of them kissing until after he sees Chelsea and Dr. Blake hook up, and then he is gonna like go for it, which I think is the exact opposite of what we anticipated from these two, but it's the same path regardless.
Yeah.
But it's like, you know, they're each like pushing each other forward until one of them finally breaks. And I do think it'll be Chelsea to break first. I think the second Dr. Blake tries to go for it, it's happening. Like I said, there will be a Dr. Blake sex scene before
they already had the dick rubbing. So yeah. anything is possible. Ugh.
Okay. So,
So Kendall's scene at the bonfire at the start of the episode is when Erica was crying to Kristen about how she feels humiliated, she doesn't know what love looks like. She's been making Kendall look so good for so long, and she's so tired, and so are we. And Kendall is, I hate Kendall so much. I just like,
he is truly a menace to society. He says it was difficult to watch and, you know, they had no set rules, but I guess Erica felt there were hidden rules. But this is the thing about him is that I knew in that first episode when he was like, there's no rules. It's because he wanted to do something like this. But the way that he phrased it to Erica is like, well, we don't, why would we need rules? We're in a relationship.
Yeah.
We're not going to change that. So like, I'm not, because I remember at that dinner with Mark L. Wahlberg, she was like, we're in a relationship. Nothing about that's going to change. And here he is in confessional saying he's single. He just like, he said he would be hurt if Erica slept with someone. But like, you know, he says he doesn't know what she saw, but she was clearly highly disturbed. Are you kidding me, Kendall? You don't know what
he knows what she saw. Really. Well, he knows. Yeah, he knows.
When they go back to their villa and he's like, I don't know what she saw. And literally everyone's like, yeah, we know what she saw. Like, shut up, Kendall.
Yeah. And then Alexis is in the confessional and she's like, it's getting very real for me. And I didn't expect to really connect with someone. And she's like, acting evil? I know.
Alexis has definitely got an evil persona. She uses that on Instagram too. Something I really liked that Kendall said, like, not that I liked that Kendall said it, but like something that struck me was when he goes, anything done in the dark will come to the light. Who does this man think he is? Like, and he's like, well, you know what? I want to fix things with Erica, but also I have to have this experience. Like, I'll die if I don't have this experience.
Yeah, I have a theory that the show is just burying him, that they are, because every opportunity they have had, they have showed the thing that will devastate the person the most. Mm-hmm. Like, but with this bonfire clip of Kendall, they showed him Erica feeling sad mm-hmm. when they had the footage of her being like, bitch, this is over. I'm done. Mm-hmm. I am a queen. This is over. And I think they're not showing him that so he could keep thinking like, poor little Erica is going to be falling back into my Kendall arms, and that she is not. And this is going to be so glorious to see. And I love that the show is preserving that for us.
I'm worried that that might not be what happens is the problem.
Me too.
But so, Alexis laughing it off like that. Also, I wrote, he is the worst, but she is right there with him. But I also mm-hmm. wonder what he has told her.
Exactly. That's the thing. And that's sort of what Erica brings up later, not to jump ahead, but what she brings up later, she starts directing to Alexis and is like, be careful, girl, because he is so manipulative. And he is. But when Erica gets back, you know, she's talking to
Jesse.
Yeah, Jesse. And, you know, she's trying to tell him how she's feeling. And he seems sweet. Sweet Jesse.
I love
luscious hair.
I love Jesse. Like, mm-hmm. capital L love Jesse when he mm-hmm. literally is like, she's like, yeah, well, this time I got to watch him have sex with two people. And he's mm-hmm. like, you don't deserve this. Like, what the hell? This is so messed up. Mm-hmm. You need someone who's going to be nice to you. But also she's like, I might need to lean on you and I might want to talk to you about feelings. He's like, yeah, let me know. We can leave and we can go talk. And like from him, I get only good vibes of like, yeah. I want to help you and like, I'm interested in you. Like, he doesn't mm-hmm. seem like the other shitty dudes who are like, I'm going to steal a girl. Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's smash. Like, he like genuinely just seems so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I completely agree. And then when they go on that date, the next scene really with either of them featured is when they go on the dates and she's telling this guy that you like, cause he's like, I'm super close to my family. And she's like, oh, I am too. But Kendall was always telling me, you know, I need to focus on myself, and putting energy into them was taking energy away from myself. And Jesse clocks it and is like, you can't go back to this guy. And it's just like classic abuser behavior of isolating her from her family. And that's the thing that really was disturbing to me, that I texted my mom afterwards and was like, wow, we're just airing this on television. Like, mm-hmm. this is scary, scary stuff.
Yeah,
he's
like,
horrible.
He is, we've said it before and we'll say it again, he's literally abusive. Mm-hmm. To like, isolating people is like the number one tool in an abuser's toolbox. And to tell someone that their family is getting in the way of their growth, what is his obsession with growth? Like, what cult is Kendall in?
Yeah.
Like, I would like to figure out which self-help books he is reading and burn them all. Because obviously someone like has missed the plot completely. I hate him so much. I hate this man.
Yeah. In my notes, it just says Kendall sucks. And I had forgotten which thing it was he did that prompted it. But this was it. It's like to separate someone from their family is just the worst.
He really is so terrible. Like I genuinely, like if I saw him on the street, I would heckle him. And I'm not kidding. I'd be like, you get away from her. I would. He's horrible.
That's the thing is Maggie's like, I would huckle him. You're a two, Maggie. And that's what this eight would be doing if I encountered Kendall. Because it would not be pretty.
And then we cut him to him in that truck with the lattes.
Sitting in the back of a yellow pickup truck.
Making out
and talking about the future. It would never say tonguing again.
That's what they were doing. It was gross. It was like very wet kisses.
Yeah. And they're talking about like, are we going to have a family? How many kids are we going to have? And I'm like, no, you do not know this man. You have known him for like 2 weeks. And he has shown very awful behavior directly to you. You should be paying more attention.
Well, then even straight to Alexis's face, Kendall's like, yeah, I don't want to give up on Erica, though. Too late, buddy.
Yeah.
Too freaking late.
He wants to have his cake and eat it, too. Mm-hmm. He's the worst, like the literal worst. I hate him and I want only bad things for him. But then when we come back to the house, Alexis and Kendall, you know, they're doing this masquerade ball. And Alexis and Kendall go with Nicole into this little, like, chair thing. And well, Nicole starts referring... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, this interaction was so weird because in the confessional, Nicole is like, I don't want to get in between them, but also I like really like them. And so I want to have a conversation about boundaries so I don't get hurt. And then she sits down and is like, so if you ever need a toy, I'm here.
Literally.
Yeah. This is just bad on so many levels. And, you know, as happy as I was to get some kind of queer rep, at the same time, like, no, not like this, not like this. This is bad all around. Nicole is clearly very drunk, like she is always. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you need to value yourself as a woman and not refer to yourself as an object. This is not good for you, girl. Get out. Go be a bisexual queen on a completely different show. Mm-hmm, we stand, but not like this.
Well, and it's the other thing too, is it's like, and you can tell Alexis is like, oh, this is weird. So she's like, well, we think of you as more than a toy. And Kendall has a confessional where he's like, I think I'm in a throuple now. I am feeling it with Alexis. And I really like her. And then he goes, I have a small connection with Nicole. Kendall.
Yeah. Yeah, you cannot say you're in a throuple and then say in the same fucking sentence that you have a small connection with one of the people that you're in a throuple with. That's not a throuple. And I hate the word throuple. And I feel bad that I just said it like six times. But that's not what that is.
You're quoting. It's okay.
It's like he is. There is such a depiction in media of bisexual women as sexual objects for straight man's desire. Mm-hmm. And that is what is being perpetrated here. And I do not like it. And I do not like the people that are participating in the perpetuation of that. And it makes me feel real icky. And not a fan of any of this. And I would love to see like healthy thruples on TV sometime. But this is not what that is.
Yeah, it's like we would like to see maybe like ethical non-monogamy instead of this.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's exactly everything you just spoke to, Evan. It's just like not good at all in any way. And I think that the next scene that they have with Kendall is when he's getting his hair done before the bonfire. Mm-hmm. I don't know any of these single people.
Like they have never shown us this woman's name. They didn't even say, like, even she had a confessional during this and they didn't put her chyron up. Let me go to the USA Network website and we can figure out who this woman is.
Well, she's doing his hair and it looks great.
And she's doing flawless job.
Yeah. Like best he's ever looked, probably. And she's talking to him. And clearly in her confessional, she hates Kendall. She knows what he's up to. She's not about it. And she's asking him how he would feel if he saw Erica doing what he was doing. And his response, this guy has the audacity to say that he knows what he is emotionally capable of and he knows what Erica is emotionally capable of. And because he is so much more like emotionally balanced, he's able to cheat. He would be upset if Erica cheated because he knows that she's not emotionally balanced like him. Like, screw you. This is the most narcissistic, mm-hmm. like emotional manipulation, mental gymnastics that I have ever heard on television.
Like it literally says it sounds hypocritical, but and I'm like, if you say it sounds hypocritical, but that means you're being a hypocrite. Shut up, Kendall. Looking on the website, it looks like I think that had to. I think that's Lauren.
Well, she was not having it either. And she was like,
if I saw my boyfriend doing this, it would be over.
Of course. But the fact, honestly, this is like what was disturbing me after I turned off the television. The fact that he's like, well, I just know I'm so much more capable of things in my life, which means that I'm able to cheat on Erica and still be in the relationship with Erica. But I know that if she did that to me, like, where do you get off, dude? Like, you are so, so horrible. And I don't even have the words to describe how terrible you are to her. To like, you're an embarrassment to everyone, your family. I can't imagine any of his family members watching this, watching his behavior, watching his emotional manipulation and his mental gymnastics. Kendall could not make me more angry, truly.
But that's the thing. Erica keeps saying, I can't possibly see anything worse at the bonfire than what I've seen. And then he reaches a new low. So I am not willing to say that he is not going to reach.
He's disgusting, honestly. Yeah. Honestly, like really disgusting.
Yeah, I have hated him since his intro package. And it's only gone downhill from there.
Yeah, he's the worst man I know.
Should we go to Aaron and Corey before we get into these final bonfires?
Let's get into the Aaron and Corey of it all. So Corey's original bonfire scene at the top of this episode is that conversation between Shaquille and Aaron when they're like talking about, you know, being interested in each other. And Corey's response is like, no, I'm okay. I'm not as stressed. Like I'm learning to love myself.
And Marco Wahlberg wants to know what if it makes Corey feel good to have girls fantasize about a little bit of Corey.
And Corey says, and I'm pretty damn good looking, if I do say so myself. And Marco Wahlberg's like, yeah, you betcha.
Marco Wahlberg has a little bit of a crush. And I'm okay with it. How could you not?
For real. Oh, man. I love it. I mean, Corey, obviously, we know that my mom loves Corey, has loved him since the first episode. And Corey really, like, proves himself here because then in the car, I can't remember if it was on the way back from the first bonfire or on the way to the second bonfire, he calls out Kendall and he's like, how can you possibly say that you want something still with your girlfriend? Like, either you're leading on your girlfriend or you're leading on Alexis. And yeah, Corey, thank you for saying something to this evil man. We are all thinking it.
Yeah, so Corey might be a king. I may have misjudged him, as is my instinct to hate everybody on site. I was wrong, and a notes app apology may be forthcoming in this instance. I feel badly about the way that I spoke about Corey.
It's okay. You know, you can't trust anybody on any of these shows. They're guilty until proven innocent, you know?
Exactly. That's true justice. Okay, Aaron goes on a date with Griffin again, which I really thought was never going to happen.
Yeah.
After the way he totally shut her down about soccer that time.
And I don't think it's going to happen again.
Yeah,
this date. It's the worst thing that's ever happened.
This date was like the biggest train wreck in the world.
So, okay. So Griffin, for the people who maybe aren't watching this show, which I can't imagine they exist, but just in case. So Griffin is like, you know what? I'm going to take this opportunity to get to know Aaron a little bit more. And so he asks her about the bonfire the night before. And Aaron starts weeping instantly, which is what she does. Aaron weeps, which is like nothing wrong with that. You know, let it out, girl. But it is very awkward because she starts talking about how her heart is breaking because she's realized how she treats people. And she like is scared of losing people and she pushes people away. And while she's saying that, she literally physically walks away from Griffin.
And starts like dry heaving. She's sobbing so hard that she's like hyperventilating. And I was like, can you imagine being Griffin and just sitting there and watching this girl have like a full breakdown across the beach from you?
She says, I haven't been genuinely happy internally on this date.
Yeah. And while she's standing there weeping on this beautiful Hawaiian beach, she is, I'm not sure if this is like the least flattering swim bottom I've ever seen or if she has a massive wedgie. I think it's a combination, but it's a real, real awkward look for her.
Well, I think wedgies are in right now. So
it's, that's actually in bikinis.
It's not a look.
So when she
should stop being a look.
When she started crying and talking about like her negative experiences, my first instinct was, is this about soccer? Which we find out later that that's not the case, but I was like, is this because of soccer? I also noticed she has a tattoo on her ribs.
Oh.
And it looks like it's a shark bite. Like it just looks like a black hole on her side. Huh. Neither of you noticed this tattoo?
No,
I was looking at her wedgie. So
the thing about it that was like, I was genuinely like, oh my gosh, because also it sort of really put into perspective what these singles are doing. Like they essentially go on a date with someone and the person exclusively talks about their significant other. And it's like, isn't this the biggest red flag ever when you're first going on a date with someone if all they do is talk about their exes and like this is all that we do on the show? And all I could think when Griffin's like just sitting on the picnic bench, like sort of like hugging his knees while Erica is like fully hyperventilating, sobbing across the beach is like, I'm sure he's like, how did I get here?
Like, I heard scratch. I bet you're wondering how I ended up here.
Yeah. And he makes no effort to console her either. It's like my instinct in that situation would be like to like go and comfort her.
His instinct is
to sit there and do nothing. And then when she does come back, be really heckin' awkward about it. And just make it awful around.
Yeah, because she's like, oh yeah, no, just some intense emotions. He's like, yeah, it's okay. Like he's just like, nope, she stopped crying. I would like her to continue not crying. Let's go. The date is over. Mm-hmm. Let's get back to the house.
That is a series wrap on Griffin, I guarantee you.
I mean, Griffin also, though, I think is pretty good friends with Jesse and Erica because he was the other one at the table when they were talking about like the threesome situation at the start of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we might see Griffin like talking to Erica and Jesse as like a third wheel, but I don't think we'll see him back on it. I thought that we wouldn't see them back on a date before this. So maybe I'm wrong.
I do love that then the outro music of this whole sequence, which honestly, like, might be the most funny sequence. I mean, obviously, like, she's sad, you know, it's sad, but, like, the whole ridiculousness of it is amazing. Like, the outro music is this girl singing, like, this might be toxic, basically. And then we see Corey on his hammock date, as discussed.
Real quick. While we're talking about songs that were amazing, there's a point earlier in the episode, and I missed this, that I want to circle back to, where it's Chelsea and Dr. Blake, and they're having like what is supposedly being like a romantic moment where they're like, oh yeah, we're into each other now. But the song that's playing says, my mind's racing fast, trying to find the red flags. And I'm like, this is the Dr. Blake theme song right here. It's like, this is not like a romantic moment. This is a red flags moment. And I just thought that was so spot on that like they subtly snuck that one
actually,
in.
Actually, that also reminds me, Dr. Blake has a confessional in this episode where he's like, I'm hoping that Chelsea can see that there are better men than Tom out there. You know, men like me. And I'm like, yeah, Blake, there are better men than Tom. But like, are you one of them? I'm not so sure.
So then we get the weird hammock day with Corey. And I'm not going to lie.
This. I loved it.
In my notes, though, I wrote Corey and his blonde girl because I can't remember this girl's name for the life of me.
Here's how you remember which one is Amanda. She's not currently fucking Kendall.
Great. I just forgot her name was Amanda. Yeah, I was so thinking like her name was Nicole.
Yeah, no, I knew there was Amanda and Nicole, and I know Nicole's the one who was crying that time, but Amanda's the only one who has exhibited, I think, any type of good sense, actually.
Yeah, and she's nice. She's like, I just don't want you thinking that Aaron's the best you can do. Like, I want to be your biggest hype woman. And then she's like, you have pretty eyes.
She's like, I want you to have a relationship that fills your cup.
Oh, good on her. Anyways, that's sort of like the end of any sort of
Aaron talks to Shaq as well about how she wants to start opening up to people, and Shaq's like, yeah, we never have serious conversations about you, so I guess that's a thing.
And then they get to the bonfire, and should we start maybe with them on the bonfire and then go through the bonfire clips? So the girls there are there first, and Aaron watches this hammock clip, the famous hammock clip.
Infamous.
And she's saying that, you know, she doesn't want to assume anything and self-destruct, and she's working on her trust issues. And it comes out that before she's been in an abusive relationship. And obviously that's just so awful. And yeah, I wrote in my notes, like, no wonder she's putting so much distance between her and Corey. Like, she's scared of being hurt, probably emotionally and like literally physically.
Yeah, like she says that she lost like a best friend. So obviously she's been through a death as well. Mm-hmm. And during that time, her partner put hands on her, which is, it totally like makes a lot more sense of why she is so reserved the way she is. And and Marco Wahlberg brings out the timeless line, people who hurt people have been hurt before.
He does the Goodwill Hunting, it's not your fault, like sort of thing to her, which like obviously she needs and I'm here for, but it's a very heavy-handed Marco Wahlberg therapy.
Yeah, because then he's also like, oh, are you ashamed that this happened? And it's like, you are not qualified to have this conversation, Marco Wahlberg. Like, you're just simply not. I love the guy, but this is peak weird uncle energy.
I also think that this is like just completely accurate to, and circling back to like what we saw from the very first episode with them, is like probably Aaron's relationships pre-Corey have all been toxic relationships. So that's why she's been like, what's going on here? I can't decide like if I want something else. Like, Corey's not giving me what he should be giving me. And I think now she's realizing that what he's giving her is kindness and respect. And she's not perhaps used to that.
And it's also like, there was moments earlier in the season where Aaron talks about how like Corey is not vulnerable enough with her. And I do think that we are starting to understand why a little bit more. And so I actually do kind of have hopes that they can make this work.
It's weird. Like the general premise of the show that like people will come and they'll like figure out their relationships by being in dates with other people is just ludicrous. There's no way it could work, but it's kind of working.
Yeah.
And that's what's amazing to me.
Yeah. Does Temptation Island work actually?
Like, I might be on board. This could be a real thing that's happening.
Oh, man. Huh. But then Corey's clip is Aaron on the date with Griffin weeping about how, like, she knows that she makes him feel like shit, basically. And, you know, he is, again, Angel Corey. And he's like, it's so tough to hear her. And I know she's taking full blame for my lack of confidence. But it takes two people, you know, in a relationship to have any sort of issue or work through it. And Marco Wahlberg asks Corey what he brings to the table. And he's says all these very nice adjectives about himself, and it's cute.
Yeah, and this is when he goes, I'm pretty darn good looking, if I do say so myself. You betcha, buddy. You betcha.
Yeah. So, good on them. Maybe, you know, they get to send 30-minute or 30-second clips to their significant others next week. So I'm really interested to see, you know, what Aaron and Corey say to each other.
Yes, absolutely. One more thing that happened kind of before the bonfire started is when Aaron and Erica were talking about like what would Kendall say. And Erica is so wise. She goes, he's going to say that we came with no rules, but like he did literally the worst possible thing you could do. And I'm concerned about him pulling me back in because he's done that many times before.
Yeah, I'm worried. I'm worried for her. And when we get to the girls' bonfire, Erica's clip is like him and Alexis on their date, and she says she's just happy she didn't watch him have sex. And at the end of the day, you know, he doesn't deserve her. And my mom texted me and was so happy to hear Erica say this, and she said Erica is getting stronger by the week. Go Erica.
Yeah,
little strong arm emoji.
Oh, when Erica said I wish I could warn Alexis, I was like, oh my god, you're too good for this world. I just know. Adore you.
Yeah, I had that written down. I wish I could warn her, and I thought, like, this is what a queen.
Right. Well, and because that's the thing, too, is it's like Alexis has clearly been like fully swept up and drawn into Kendall's situation. And this is probably what it was like when Erica and Kendall started dating. Like it's the whole like love bombing thing where you make someone feel like they're the center of the universe. And then you go like he's already starting to do the back and forth where he tells Alexis that he doesn't want to give up on Erica. Like he's literally starting the process to manipulate Alexis on TV. And this is what he's willing to do on TV. Imagine what he's doing when there's no cameras.
I know he's the worst. And Kendall's clip. Well, first off, Mark L. Wahlberg is like, Kendall, are you ready to see your clip? And he's like, yeah. And Mark goes, okay, buddy. Like you can tell Mark hates Kendall. Mark is not having Kendall.
Kendall also is probably the type of person who like asks production for a lot. And they're like, no.
But the clip is just Jesse saying that he wants to get to know Erica. It's them on their date. And Kendall afterwards says, you know, he thinks that Erica is realizing who she is as a woman. And he doesn't think that she would be into Jesse. And he definitely thinks Erica can forgive some of the things she's seen.
He says, Erica deserves more and has hidden talents. We talk about that all the time. Shut up, Kendall. Shut up. Shut up.
Yeah. If Kendall had any respect for the person that Erica is or the talents that she has and what she brings to the table, he wouldn't be so insistent on her growth and her achieving her goals or not achieve. Like she is a wonderful person, but he is like, has it in his brain that she needs to like change and improve somehow. He doesn't think she's a good person. And that's because he is not a good person. And he needs to just shut the F up about it.
Yeah.
I still, and you know what? Because I only want bad things for him. I will say it. Close your mouth all the way, Kendall. Don't be a mouth breather. He's such a mouth breather. Close your mouth, please, sir. I don't want to watch you breathe through your mouth every time I have to see you on camera. Anyways.
Got him.
I hate him.
Yeah,
it's the meanest thing I can think to say about him.
I mean, I said something meaner about him to Scally last week off the pod, but I don't think I should say it on the pod.
Probably not.
Okay, so Kristen, her scene at the bonfire is Julian talking to the boys about how Kristen doesn't want to marry him and he changes things to make her happy, but is he happy? And it's really hard when he puts a lot of effort in, but it's never good enough for her. And Kristen's response is just like, she is finally realizing like her part in their relationship being so broken as well. But it's like, I still don't blame her. I don't blame either of them. They've been through so much. Either.
Yeah.
Like I said at the top, I really turned a corner with them this week and I'm rooting for them. I hope that they leave together and are living a happy life now. They obviously, I'm sure production told them like they're not allowed to post anything and like spoil the ending online. But she's the only one who hasn't been in pictures on Instagram with the other girls, probably because she lives on the East Coast and they live on the West Coast. Sorry, all my detective work. She lives on the East Coast and they live on the West Coast. But yeah, I'm hopeful that they can figure this thing out.
I feel like it's possible, especially after seeing Julian's scene at the bonfire, which was Kristen talking to Juwan about her brother passing away, and how she didn't even know her brother had a struggle with addiction, that he was struggling behind closed doors. And she feels like she herself is also struggling behind closed doors, but in a different way. And she sees that she does need to open up and, you know, kind of let the hurt out and work through it. And Julian's like, we're going through the exact same thing in here. I don't like seeing her cry, but like, this is a real topic and it's like, this is real shit. And like, he's obviously glad that she's just opening up at all.
Yeah. And I really like the production is showing these two the clips that will help them both know what the other is going through and help them build that relationship. Because they could easily not do that. They could be real jerks about it and just production interfere to mess them up. They are fully on board with the, you know, the Kristen and Juliet love story. And they're trying to make it work just like those two are trying to make it work. And I think it's great.
I respect it. I respect
it. Me too.
So I
just
guess
like production is trying to break up Kendall and Erica, which I also respect.
Yeah, and honestly, Chelsea and Tom.
Is production on Temptation Island good?
Like, maybe.
I hate to say it.
What have we learned from this podcast?
I sound ridiculous, but what Temptation Island works and the production is good?
So Chelsea's clip that she gets is that gross clip of Thomas rubbing mud on Sophia's ass. And afterwards she says she feels nothing and that she doesn't want her man to want to touch other women like that. And after that I said yes, because that would be my main problem with it all too, is not even like the act of it. It's the fact that their rules were very clearly stated and yet he still is pushing these boundaries in this way. And, you know, Mark L. Wahlberg points out, like, you are immediately taking what he did, because she's like, maybe he saw what, you know, the clip of me dancing and having fun and then thought he was okay to do something like this. And Mark L. Wahlberg is like, why are you blaming his actions on yourself? And she says
that's the setup of Temptation Island, Mark.
Exactly. But she says, hold on, sorry, there's a siren outside my New York City apartment. But she says that she doesn't feel like Thomas is taking this clearly, and she doesn't care how he feels, and Blake respects women, and he would never act like that. I mean, Chelsea.
Yeah, because
let's not get ahead of
Blake
ourselves
respects
here.
Women. Okay.
He respected all over her back.
Ew.
Evan.
Anyway, okay, so something from this scene that was my favorite thing, before that comment that Evan just made, which is my new favorite thing.
Mark, my mother listens to this, Evan.
Oh my God, Mary, I'm so sorry.
Guess what? Mary has children, okay? It's fine. She knows what's up.
Mary, you need to come on the finale so that there's not filth like this on the finale of the podcast.
Thank you for supporting my cause, Evan.
Yes, we love Mary. We want her on the pod. So Marco Wahlberg says, yeah, it's not fun to see your boyfriend touching someone else. I get that. Do you get that, Mark?
Oh, Mark. He's great.
He is. I don't know if I like him, but he is incredible TV.
He's the heartbeat of the show, honestly.
Chelsea also says that she is ready to accept that he cannot change his flirtiness and she cannot get over his behavior. She's making a connection with Blake. He's obviously making a connection with that girl.
Yeah. Iconic.
Honestly,
oh my gosh, it's so funny.
Is Chelsea the star of the show again? Maybe not the protagonist, but a star. She is a star.
It's really funny. It really is. Like, Chelsea and Thomas is actually like low stakes enough for me. Yeah. That, like, makes me giggle because, like, Erica and Kendall, like, obviously were a bit worried for Erica, but like, Chelsea and Thomas is just like, goodness.
They're going to be, like, both of them as people will be fine after this experience. Yeah, we don't have to worry about them, right? Mm-hmm. So Tom's scene is Chelsea and Blake cuddling in the pool. So, like, the dick rubbing scene he gets to see.
And he closes his eyes halfway through. He's, like, got his eyes closed and he's not even watching anymore. And I was like,
what he says is, I'm surprised that she's falling for someone, but, like, I'm also falling for someone with Sophia. So, like, obviously Chelsea doesn't feel valued enough by me. So she's looking elsewhere. And we'll get there. Well, it's fine. And so then Markel Wahlberg goes, well, what are you getting from Sophia that's new? And he's like, Sophia accepts that I'm flirty. And it's like, yeah, you're flirting with her, not with other women in front of her. Like, what the hell, Tom?
I mean, like, clearly it's like the type of situation when you try to break up with someone and they're like, oh yeah, I've been feeling the same way. And it's like, clearly you were not feeling the same way. And you're only saying that to save your ego, because he's like, oh, well, like, clearly she's feeling very, very connected to this guy and really likes him and is falling for him. But I'm also doing that with Sophia.
Well, yeah, I just felt like he like fully acknowledges that, like, there is nothing he can say here. He's like,
yes,
what she is doing is upsetting me, but I am not allowed to be upset by it because of who I am and what I have done. So I'm just kind of accepting the fact that my relationship is over now in front of everybody. This is awkward.
Yeah.
And he has the audacity to say, like, well, I just never expected her. I never thought I would have to worry about her doing this. Oh, yeah, because you came here so that you could do it. Mm-hmm. But now that the tables have been turned and it doesn't feel so good, does it, Thomas?
Feels bad. Feels bad, man. Mm-hmm.
It was pretty bad.
Literally just, why, men? Why? Like, that's the conclusion at the end of this episode. But we do get a little bombshell of the 30-second video messages that the men can send to their girlfriends. So will the men send 30-second videos next week and then, like, women send them at a different date? Or, like, does everyone have the opportunity to send 30 seconds?
Everyone, I believe. I feel like they record them and then they do a bonfire where they all watch them. And then they all get to respond. But, like, I cannot wait to see what Kendall says to Erica, what Chelsea says to Tom.
I can't wait to see what Erica says to Kendall.
Oh,
well, he said that they don't have to send one. And I am hoping she does not send one. And that Kendall just reads the exact wrong thing into that.
I don't know. Evan, I have some bad news. Should we say this is a spoiler for anyone?
So this could be a spoiler for Temptation Island. We don't, it might be, it might not be. Mm-hmm. We don't know. So skip forward like a minute if you are concerned about this, but there is an Instagram post from January and Erica and Kendall were at the same location taking photos.
The same resort. We know it is a current photo because once a girl commented on the photo and said, like, is this an old photo because of his hair? And he says, no, I cut my hair again. And it looks like they are at the same, like, Mexican resort in January, which was long after this was filmed. So there is fear that they have gotten back together, which means the reunion is going to be crazy if that's true. My mom is devastated. I cannot tell you the text that I got from my mom. When I told her the news, I said, mommy, you're not going to believe this. I had to pull out the mommy because I knew she was going to be so upset. It's not good. It's not.
That's, let's just hope that Instagram isn't real.
Yes.
there's still a chance.
Yeah.
Please.
That's what I would like. I would like for Instagram to not be real. Praying that maybe that's when they filmed a reunion show or something.
Sure, exactly. Yeah. I didn't even think about that, Kirsten. That is a really good point. Maybe it's when they filmed the reunion and the tell-all, and that's what's happening. And they were both, they all went to Mexico to do that.
I'm praying. I'm praying that they all traveled internationally during the pandemic rather than.
That would be so much better than the alternative.
Oh, man. Okay. Oh,
that's awful.
Scumbag okay. King of the Week. Evan, who's your pick?
Oh, geez. I think I kind of have to go with Dr. Blake.
for the pool deck.
one particular part of Dr. Blake is the scumbag king of the week.
So here's the thing. I would like to vote for Thomas as the scumbag king of the week. He literally wrote his name on a woman.
Real contender.
I'm seconding that. I think that Thomas wins scumbag king of the week.
But Blake, a close second. I'm always here for any Blake hate on this pod.
Yeah. For sure.
So I guess that's it. That's all. Another episode of Temptation Island in the books.
Woohoo! Let's hope that we get some good spicy drama next week. I'm very excited to see these video clips. I hope they give us the goods.
I'm very much hoping that these videos give us a lot to talk about because I'm very excited for next week's podcast. Evan, if people would like to hear more from you, where can they find you?
Well, the main thing is on Twitter. I am at ShovelMage. I tweet a lot of all lowercase nonsense tweets. It's really my thing. I might pop up here and there on RHAP, especially for, hot dummies podcasts. Sort of like the pandemic ones. Came and just wiped out my ability to process any other form of television. So now I'm all in on this. It's great.
Same. Oh my gosh, Evan, same.
Yeah. And, there's a chance I might be like early stage planning that's probably not going to amount to anything, but I'm thinking about starting a podcast about the Seattle Mariners. So I would be very excited to do that. So if you're interested in listening to that, follow me on Twitter and maybe it'll happen and you will find out the details there if it does.
Well, now you have to do it. And Evan is a great, great Twitter follow. Very funny.
Yes. I'm wonderful.
You've been so wonderful on this podcast. Yeah, honestly.
Truly. Evan is wonderful. Mm-hmm. Anytime I get to talk to Evan, it's a good day. Maggie, what else do you have going on? Where can they
go? Yeah, I'm podcasting about Big Brother Canada. I'll be back, I think, Monday for the live feed update. I'm loving the season. I think everybody is really fun and I would want to hang out with like 95% of them, which is more than any other Big Brother cast in recent memory. So you can follow me on Twitter at _MLMorgan and on Instagram at @MLMorgan_. I tweet a lot about Temptation Island and my mom. There's photos of my mom on Instagram if you're interested in seeing Mary. hit me up there and, I'm super looking forward to next week's episode. So.
Hell yeah, it's going to be great. If people want to hear more from me in the meantime, I am on Twitch at twitch.tv/KirstenSaidWhat 3 times a week. I'm podcasting about BoJack Horseman over on BoJack Horsepod with Lindsay Wilson and podcasting about Riverdale with Mary Kwiatkowski over on KowskiCast. And I will be on the Big Brother live feed update on Saturday. So you'll get to hear from me again soon on that. And so thank you for paying attention to us when we're a train wreck like this. Truly, I apologize. I should be apologies,
Kirsten.
Okay, never mind. I take it back. I don't apologize. If you don't like it, screw you.
Blame Marco Wahlberg for keeping me up past my bedtime. It's his fault.
So we will be back next week to talk about season 3, episode 6 of Temptation Island. It's going to be a great time. So we'll see you then. Bye.
Bye.